Good afternoon. Today I'd like to discuss some of the things that are happening in our government that may be a great change. Public schools today can waste 12 years of your child's life. They can cripple your child's ability to read. Public schools deceive parents into thinking their children are doing well in school when they're not. Public schools indoctrinate children with anti-parent, anti-American, anti-Judeo-Christian values. Public schools expose innocent children to often shocking sexual material in so-called sex education classes. Public schools pressure parents to give their children potentially dangerous mind-altering drugs just to settle them down. Well, that was not always the case. Earlier in this country, we had people like John Trumbull. He was a law student under John Adams and justice on the Supreme Court of Connecticut. He had already read through the Bible for the first time when he was 4 years old. When he was 6 and a half, he beat his pastor in a Greek contest. And when he was seven and a half years old, he passed the entrance exam to Yale University. Declaration signer Charles Carroll entered college at the age of 10. Fisher Ames entered Harvard when he was 12. Benjamin Rush graduated from Princeton when he was 14. John Quincy Adams was 8 years old when he performed musket drills during the Revolution and with the famous Massachusetts Minutemen. And when he was 11, he received a congressional diplomatic appointment overseas as secretary to the ambassador in Paris. And at the age of 14, received a similar appointment of court to the court of Catherine the Great in Russia. And we see this happening. The education back in those days was so amazing that they would have, for example, the arithmetic elementary math problems during the 1860s. Here's an example of it. I insured 2/3 of a shop worth $3,600 and 4/5 of a house worth $6,000, paying $126. What was the rate of insurance? Or how much money must be given with 9 $100 shares at 15% discount in exchange for 8 $100 bonds at 2% discount? Or consider the math problems in 1877. This was a mental math test. This is for elementary school kids. Okay, a mental math test. No pencil, no paper allowed. First question: a boat worth $864, of which 1/8 belonged to A, 1/4 belonged to B, and the rest to C, was lost. What loss did each sustain, it having been insured for $500? Or on a farm, there are 60 animals, horses, cows, and sheep. For each horse, there are 3 cows. For each cow, there are 2 sheep. How many animals of each kind? Or, for example, this third question: if 7 men can do a piece of work in 4 days, in what time can it be done if 3 of the men leave when the work is half finished? A friend of mine, Charlotte Iserby, who's passed away now, but she was in the Reagan administration in the Department of Education, and she wrote a book called The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. She had taken all the material that she had there in the Department of Education, and she transferred it to she brought it home, and then she gave some of it, which I think was Human Events, and basically they published this material, and after that she was fired because she was releasing what was actually going on in the Department of Education. This is the reason that Trump is wanting to disband, to actually get rid of the Department of Education. But basically, this was a transformation of America. Education has profoundly destructive consequences. By 12th grade, American children are math and science dunces by international standards. They've done studies on this, and we are way down on the list. We need to see government schools not as they claim to be or as they once were, but as they actually are, irreformable. The survey published in the summer of 2001 by the Colonial Williamsburg Foundation found that 1/4 of teenagers had no idea that American states fought each other in the Civil War, that 13 original colonies declared their independence from England, and that 10% couldn't identify the first president of the United States. 1/3 didn't know who Abraham Lincoln was, did not know that the Mississippi River flowed down to the Gulf of Mexico, or who the U.S. fought in World War II. There was a book written by Alan Quist when I was writing my dissertation, and it's The New Federal Curriculum and How It Is Enforced. The book shows how, by taking control of public school curriculum, rewriting American history, and calling it social studies, or socialist studies as I like to call it, undermining national sovereignty, minimizing natural law, promoting environmentalism, requiring multiculturalism, restructuring government, and redefining education as job skills. The government, with the help of the Center for Civic Education, a non-governmental organization, has redefined what education is and what's to be taught. See, what in the early days, they would train the king and the people around him to take over the country. So they had to get a liberal education of all kinds of different subjects, liberal being a good thing in this sense. It was liberal in the sense that it was covering a wide variety of subjects, because in order to rule, you had to know many things. Well, that's what the American founding fathers, they wanted us to be the ruling, and that's why they passed the old Deluder Satan Act, because they wanted the people to rule and not some tyrant. And so if everybody was educated, they could make sure that the government did not get out of line. In fact, they basically wanted them to know to read their Bible, because if they could read their Bible, then they could understand whether the government was obeying what God had written. A second book that he wrote called American Schools basically is showing that there's a battleground going on, and the battleground is our educational system here in America. The children are taught to hate America. The love for the flag and country is being destroyed in our universities, where students are taught to hate America. We are a racist nation, and capitalism has created greed that has pitted the poor against the rich. To be a patriot is seen as being chauvinistic, better than anyone else. This is why President Trump's America First theme was so unpopular with the leftist agenda. Furthermore, it flies in the face of the present trend toward globalism. One can't see themselves as being citizens of the world if they see them as proud citizens of the United States of America. Therefore, if the agenda of the World Economic Forum is to be realized, destroying one's allegiance to the United States of America is critical. Here's a small sampling of what's being taught in our universities. United States is no better than any other country, and in many ways worse. God is at best a non-issue, and at worst a dangerous and foolish belief. Christianity is largely a history of inquisitions, crusades, oppressions, and anti-intellectualism. Islam, on the other hand, is a religion of peace. Yet Muslims have killed more people than all the other world dictators combined. According to Robert Spence, an authority on Islam, they have killed in excess of 250 million people since the time of Muhammad. Israel is a racist nation, morally no different than apartheid South Africa. The big government is the only humane way to govern a country. All whites are racist and privileged. Children who do not support leftist values should be removed from home and placed in homes where they are taught to conform to big government. We could go on, but hopefully you got the point. The university is designed to destroy the conservative, godly faith and values of the students' parents. And so this is what we see happening. How are the politicians preparing us for a one-world government? They are doing so by destroying patriotism and national sovereignty. Among the millennial generation, patriotism has been lost. President Trump's America First policy did not sit too well with millennials or with the world's elite, as it acknowledged by French presidential Emmanuel Macron, who referred to Trump's nationalism as a betrayal of moral values. Well, we have what we call destructionism. In more recent times, there's been an adaptation of a socialist technique. It's called destruction. This is where the country's past heroes are portrayed in a negative light so that people emotionally detach from them and their values. Then there's a period of disillusionment and searching. Finally, there is an introduction of rewritten history with socialist values. Dystopian writer George Orwell explained this in 1984. Every record has been destroyed or falsified. Every book rewritten. Every picture has been repainted. Every statue and street building has been renamed. Every date has been altered, and the process is continuing day by day and minute by minute. History has stopped. Nothing exists except endless present in which the party is always right. I know, of course, the past is falsified, but it would never be possible for me to prove it, even when I did the falsification myself. After the thing is done, no evidence ever remains. The only evidence is inside my own mind, and I don't know with any certainty than any other human being shares my memories. Orwell explained how to alter a nation's trajectory. Those who control the past control the future. and those who control the present control the past. It's actually a sales technique. First, the salesman points out the negative aspects of an old product a customer is using. Then the customer becomes dissatisfied with it and curious about new options. Then the salesman presents the positive aspects of a new product. Deconstruction does this on a national scale. The deconstruction is drive, neutral, reverse. A method also accomplished in the classroom, separate students from their past by portraying negatively the country's founders, get students into a neutral point of view where they are open-minded, then brainwash students by presenting positively a socialist future. Socialist historian Howard Zinn, in his book, A People's Republic of the United States, written in 1980, is of this genre. Senator Chaplain Peter Marshall said of the deconstruction, along with our higher education came a debunking contest, sort of national sport. It was a smarter to revile than to revere, more fashionable to deprecate than to appreciate. Debunking is a sign of decaying foundations. Cognitive psychologists have carried out experiments where research can actually implant false memories in people's minds, making people believe that they remember events that never actually happened. This can be done on a national level. Deconstruction is called cancel culture. Involves selectively re-editing and ridiculing past individuals or events in order to advance a future political agenda, altering a nation's past in order to change its future. The 1975 movie Monty Python and His Holy Grail was in this vein, mocking the legendary King Arthur in England's noble history. A scriptwriter for Hollywood's sitcoms confided how they were instructed to make them laugh at what they hold sacred. One cannot be proud of something that he's ashamed of. At the same time, separating people from their past is a mention and in a quote attributed to Karl Marx, take away heritage of a people and they are easily conquered. Yang Burma, Minister of Culture in Borneo, wrote in the Brunei Times, August 29, 1913, a nation or generation that does not know the history of their nation is a nation that has lost its identity and can be easily manipulated. This is why the first emperor of China, Qin Shi Huangdi, who conquered kingdoms to unify China in 221 BC, destroyed all history books. The basic annals of the first emperor of Qin reported Chancellor Li Si told the emperor in 213 BC, I, your servant, propose that all historians' records other than those of Qin's be burned. If anyone under heaven has copies of the classics of history, Xu Jing, they shall deliver them to the governor for burning. Anyone who dares discuss the classics of history shall be publicly executed. Anyone who uses history to criticize the present shall have his family executed. Anyone who has failed to burn the books after 3 days of this announcement shall be subjected to tattooing and be sent to build the Great Wall. President Jimmy Carter started the Department of Education in 1979, and from that time on, proficiency in math, literature, and history began to decline. Lawrence Reed examined the trend in this article. The myth of the Americans were poorly educated before Massachusetts government schooling. Solzhenitsyn said, if we don't know our own history, we simply have to endure the same mistakes, sacrifices, and absurdities all over again. Howard Zinn's People's Republic History of America sold more than 2.5 million copies. It's published by Hollywood celebrities. Pushed by Hollywood celebrities, defended by university professors, all they must know better, and assigned in high school and college classrooms to reach students that American history is nothing more than a litany of oppression, slavery, and exploitation. So we have abortion on demand, population control, gun control, social justice, global governments, a new world order coming. Naive students are taught that in communist countries, everyone owns everything equally. From each according to his ability, to each according to his needs, wrote Karl Marx. But does this ever happen? Who decides what one's ability is or what one needs? A question then simply needs to be asked. Who decides who lives in a nice house? Who lives in a dumpy house? The answer is someone in government dictates those things. Well, whoever ultimately dictates those things is the dictator. In practice, socialism and communism are nothing more than a monarchy makeover, a top-down system of government, where one supreme leader forces his will on others. President Harrison warned in danger, the danger to all well-established free governments arises from the unwillingness of people to believe in the influence of designing men. This old trick of those who would usurp a government of a country in the name of democracy, they speak, warning the people against the influence of wealth and the danger of aristocracy, history, ancient, modern, is full of such examples. It behooves people to be most watchful of those whom they have entrusted to power. Harrison added, the great dread seems to have been a consolidated power. That government be essentially radical or changed. President Eisenhower stated June 24, 1957, the national government was itself a creature of the states, yet today often made to appear as though that creature, Frankenstein-like, is determined to destroy its creator. Reagan stated, all of us need to be reminded that the federal government did not create the states. The states created the federal government. President Gerald Ford remarked in June 4, 1975, a government too large and bureaucratic can stifle initiative and by frustrating statism. In America, our sovereign is the citizen. We must never forget that. Governments exist to serve the people. The state is the creature of populace. President Harrison wrote, it is a part of wisdom for the Republic to limit the service of the officer to whom he has entrusted the management to a period so short as to prevent his forgetting that he is the accommodable agent, not the principal, the servant, not the master. And we see this happen. The Naked Capitalist and the Naked Communist were written by Cleon Skousen, who was on staff with the FBI. He put together 45 current communist goals, which have been followed right down to the present. Get control of the schools. Use them as transmission belts for socialism and current communist propaganda. Gain control of all student newspapers. Infiltrate the press. Gain control of all key positions in radio, TV, and motion pictures. Eliminate all laws governing obscenity by calling them censorship and a violation of free speech and press. Break down all cultural standards of morality by promoting pornography and obscenity in schools, in books and magazines, motion pictures, radio and TV. Present homosexuality, degeneracy, and promiscuity as normal, natural, and healthy. Of those 45 communist goals, most of them have already been implemented. Infiltrate the churches and replace revealed religion with social religion. Discredit the Bible and emphasize the need for intellectual maturity, which does not need a religious crutch. Eliminate prayer or any phase of religious expression in schools on the grounds that it violates the principle of separation of church and state. So what happened? We have treason by the educators, and this treason involved child abuse, contributing to the delinquency of a minor, destroying the belief in biblical religion, drug pushing, fraud and extortion. And John Adams said, the Native American who cannot read is as rare as the appearance of a comet or an earthquake. Federal Literacy in 1993 stated that 55% of Americans were functionally illiterate, and that's after a huge amount of money has been spent. The dumbing down of the nation for the purpose of overthrowing the government and deliberately harming the minds of child, the pornographic sex education, even in kindergarten, the promotion of atheism, nihilism, evolutionism, addiction, suicide, homicide, it's been produced. And this is happening in America. The Common Core is promoting evolution. Why do they promote evolution? Because a socialist or a communist country cannot have God being authority over it. So it has to be the final authority. So they have to believe, they have to get away with deal without a God. And the only way to explain things without God is so far as evolution. Evolution is simply a way of explaining things without God in deity, so that socialism needs to have evolution. It's dependent upon it, as opposed to the Christian view of creation. And the Common Core is that of rebellion as opposed to respect for authority. Common Core teaches relativism as opposed to a belief in absolute standards. It teaches abortion and population reduction as opposed to the biblical principle to be fruitful and multiply. It teaches multiculturalism, in other words, all religions are of equal value, as opposed to Christ is the only way. It teaches social justice as opposed to private property. Social justice means there is no private property. Everybody has access to it, supposedly. And of course, Common Core would teach persecute Christians as opposed to loving the brethren. The battle for the minds of students, John Dewey, Karl Marx, Joseph Stalin, Adolf Hitler. Dewey wrote in the Middle Class Works in 1915, education which trains children to docility and obedience to be careful performance of imposed tasks, because they are imposed regardless of whether they lead, is suited to autocratic society. These are the traits needed in a state where there is one head to plan and to care for the lives and institutions of the people. Marx stated, education of all children from the moment they can get along without their mother's care shall be a state institution at state expense. Antonio Gramsci wrote, before puberty, a child's personality has not yet been formed, and it's easier to guide its life and make it acquire specific habits of order, discipline, and work. Lenin stated, give me 4 years to teach children, and the seed I have sown will never be uprooted. Stalin stated, education is a weapon whose effect depends on who holds it in his hands and in whom it is aimed. Communist Party education workers in Congress stated in 1918, we must create out of the younger generation a generation of communists. We must turn our children, who can be shaped like wax, into real good communists. We must remove children from the crude influence of their families. We must take them over and, speak frankly, nationalize them. From the first days of their lives, they will be under the healthy influence of communist children's nurseries and schools. They will grow up to be real communists. Hitler stated November 6, 1933, when an opponent declares, I will not come over to your side, I calmly say, your child belongs to us already. What will you be? You'll pass on. Your descendants, however, now stand in the new camp. Well, this is what happened. And so there was a unique case that reached the Supreme Court involving an estate of a Frenchman, Stephen Girard. And this is in the Supreme Court case, Vital versus Girard's executors. He had arrived in America before the Declaration of Independence, where he settled in Philadelphia, and he lived there until his death in 1831. But he bequeathed his estate, which was valued at over $7 million, to the city with the condition that it construct for orphans between the ages of 6 and 18 a college to be named after him, which he specifically stipulated, I enjoin and require that no ecclesiastic, missionary, or minister of any sect and denomination whatsoever hold or exercise any station or duty whatever in that said college, nor shall any person ever be admitted for any purpose or visitor within the premises. The plan of education proposed by Mr. Girard is a derogatory to the Christian religion, tends to weaken man's reverence for that nation and their conviction of its authorities and importance, and therefore, in its general character, tends to be mischievous and not to useful ends. So Daniel Webster went for 3 days without notes before the Supreme Court to present the argument, basically, that no school should be without representation of the Christian message. He said the proposed school is to be founded on plain and clear principles and for plain and clear objectives of infidelity. When little children were brought up into the presence of the Son of God, his disciples proposed to send them away, but he said, suffer little children to come unto me. He opened at once the youthful mind, the everlasting fountain of living waters, the only source of eternal truths. Suffer little children to come unto me. And that injunction is a perpetual obligation. It addresses itself today with the same earnestness and the same authority which attended its first utterance to the Christian world. It is a force everywhere and at all times. It extends to the ends of the earth. It will reach to the end of time, always and everywhere, sounding in the ears of men with an emphasis which no repetition can weaken and with an authority which nothing can supersede. Suffer little children to come unto me. He won all nine jurors. He won the case. Tremendous power that Daniel Webster had. But that was so important to him. The Bible says, forbid them not to come unto me. Well, various thoughts indoctrinated of college students. Jesus said, suffer little children. The Advanced Training Institute of America was an ATI program that Bill Gothard put together, a Christian homeschooling program. And instead of studying biology, chemistry, math, history as separate subjects, it would teach biblical principles which related to many aspects of life from a single passage of Scripture. You take, for example, Jesus said, when he looked at the multitudes, he saw them as sheep without a shepherd. What did Jesus use to look at? He used his eyes. So now we're studying vision. We're studying light, first of all. Light coming and reaching the eye. Now we're studying biology. It reaches the cornea of the eye. Then it goes back to the back of the eye. And now we're studying studying not only biology, we're studying neuroanatomy, histology. We're studying the message goes back to the brain itself. And so we're studying all of these subjects based upon one verse of scripture. So he sees what are some of the diseases of the eye, myopia, short-sightedness. Well, there's a scripture verse. It says that the fool, he says, short-sightedness is not being able to see far away. And so not knowing the consequences of my actions would be someone who is not seeing the far away. But what about farsightedness is the ability to see far but not sensitive to the promptings of God's Spirit or the spirit of those around me. So there's a spiritual application by analogy of almost every aspect of the physical world, and that's what Bill Gothard did, and those people would remember that forever. It was an excellent teaching program because it's based on Scripture. Well, the deep state came in, and it began as a shadow government that manipulates and shapes the policies of the visible government without regard to the best interests of the country, the U.S., the Constitution, the laws enacted by Congress, or the public policies of the president who heads the executive branch. The deep state does exist within the shadows of power and is working to submerge the United States in an emerging new world order against the stated policy of America. The leaks from the intelligence community intended to delegitimize and even topple the Dooley president the last time he was in office are just part of an evidence of exposing this existence, the direction and power of the deep state. The evidence of the deep state is seen in the use of mass migration to upend Christian culture and the idea of nationhood, the creation of refugee crisis, the environmental fear-mongering as a means of advancing world government, the building of regional economic and political blocs as another means of achieving world government regions, where they can take all the regions, put them together, and now you have a global government. But most people would reject the idea of giving over the sovereignty of the United States, so they're dividing it up into regions. As a matter of fact, China is one of the leading role in advancing these plans, economic consequences of our government's response to COVID-19, what's really happening with the anti-police riots of 2020, and the propagandizing of dumbing down both morally and academically of our children via the deep state's most powerful weapon, the public government schools. All of this is happening. And we look on this page, we see this memo of the number of people, the percentage of people in the federal government giving their money to, this is back in the days when Trump was running against Hillary Clinton, and about 95% or 99% in some cases of all the government agencies were giving money to support Clinton, not Trump. The memo produced by Richard Higgins, while he was serving the U.S. National Security Counselor as Director of Strategic Planning in the Trump administration, the deep state referred to many times. Under the deep state, the document outlines the coalition of interests that are working to destroy President Trump and America itself, bringing together the hard left, Islamic organizations, globalists, mega corporations, the bureaucracy, and others. The deep state was totally supporting the Hillary Clinton, with over 95% of the money donated by federal employees going to Hillary's campaign. So there's a shadow government, an unelected deep state, and this, many people believe it's here to stay, but I believe Donald Trump is going to take away that deep state. And he's going to do it with Elon Musk, and he's going to do it, I think. Conspiracies have existed throughout history, conspiracies in the Bible. We have Absalom's plot to overthrow King David. We have a plot to kill Apostle Paul. We have Psalm 2:2, the kings of the earth conspiring against the Lord and his anointed. In Ephesians 6:12, Paul warns the faithful of spiritual struggle against principalities, against powers, against rulers of darkness. So we need to drain the swamp. And one of the things that's basically setting up all of this for a one world government just happens to be the UN. So we want to go to the inside the UN. Problems with strengthening a United Nations is that in order to be an arbitrator of legitimacy, you would have to, first of all, be able to distinguish between right and wrong, between good and evil. What happens when the planetary police run amok among the agents of bloodshed? when the local police abuse their power, we have avenues of redress. We can go to the mayor or the governor and complain. But from what body can those abused by the planetary police seek justice? The escalating scandal of unpunished atrocities committed by the UN peacekeepers illustrates the planetary justice. Police are beyond accountability. One atrocity not caught on camera involved placing a child in a metal container and withholding water from him for 2 days. Predictably, the relentless African heat killed the child. One Belgian UN soldier testified that it was regular practice to use metal boxes in prisoner cells, and then other Somalis probably died similarly with similar gruesome deaths. On August 8th, Italian military officials admitted that the Italian soldiers assigned to the UN duty in Somalia had also tortured and otherwise abused Somali civilians. According to the Washington Post, two generals who led the Italian forces to Somalia resigned in June following publication of graphic reports of sexual violence against a Somali woman, electric torture of a young man, and allegations that an officer had murdered a young boy. Drugs and prostitutes were also allowed to circulate freely among Italian UN troops, according to New York Times. Correspondent Barbara Crosette, whose primary beat was the UN, elaborated the bad behavior of UN forces in Cambodia was not limited to the abuse of women. Well, this goes on and on. We see that's what happens when you have no one to basically rein in people. And so we have a full list of Trump's cabinets to basically overcome this deep state. Trump picks all of these people. We have a White House Chief of Staff, Susie Wiles, Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, Attorney General, is now no longer Matt Gaetz. The Deputy Attorney General is Todd Blanche. And of course, the HHS Secretary, Robert F. Kennedy, UN Ambassador, Elise Stefanovic, Border Czar, Tom Holman. He should do a great job. Basically, he's just chomping at the bit to send all these people back. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, he's done a great job in the military. He'll be a great addition. We see all of these people. This is going to be an amazing force that we have. And then with Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy as the Department of Government Efficiency, Elon Musk and Ramaswamy are going to do a great job of basically cutting off probably 85% of the funds, maybe basically saving maybe $2 trillion a year. We have a tendency to not know exactly where all the money's going. Well, I have a thing here. It's called Where's the Pork? The IRS sends $3.6 billion in stimulus checks to 2.2 million dead people. $6.9 million to smart toilet analysis, giving anal prints. $3.6 billion in paycheck to protection program paid out of 57,000 recipients on the do not pay list. $9 billion in COVID aid to bail out colleges in California. 65,000 fake students enrolled in California junior college system. $123 trillion in unfunded Medicare Social Security benefits. In 2018, the U.S. Air Force spent $1,280 per cup on hot cups to keep coffee hot for fighter pilots. 2 years... 2 years later, the Travis Air Force Base reported 60th Aerial Portrait Squadron brought 10 hot cups for $6,930, $2.1 million for sex education for commercial sex workers in Ethiopia. Fauci's NIAID spent $478,188 to turn monkeys into transgender pieces. EPA spent $92 million on luxury furniture. EPA spent $6,000 on furniture for every one of the agency's 15,492 employees. They were paid to stay at home. The average federal employee was paid for 48 days to stay at home. With the addition of Juneteenth, that meant that they had 44 days off every year. Chinese Communist Party was given $200 million, $400 million in U.S. COVID aid. NASA spent $1 million to prepare religions for all the discovery of extraterrestrial life. The feds admit to $281 billion in improper payments in 2021. The State Department state gave $25,000 in grants to Chinese surfers. The U.S. gave $183,750 to teach Chinese kids how to cross the street. The U.S. gave Russian lab $550,000 for gruesome cat experiments. And the list goes on and on. So, anyway, this is where our government is being spending money. Absolutely, there's more ridiculous things than you can imagine. Anyway, this is what's happening, and this is what Elon Musk is going to basically do away with most of these things and hopefully bring us back to some reasonable accountability. Thank you.